Good evening. In the interest of bringing you the issues behind this political year 1956, WJR brings you a debate between the heads of the Democratic and Republican parties in Michigan. This debate has been transcribed earlier today at United Auto Workers Local 157 headquarters in Detroit, features Republican State Chairman John Fikens versus State Chairman Neil Stabler. The moderator will be Blaine Maron, president of UAW Local 157, whom you just heard in the background on the public address system. Here is Mr. Maron to explain the rules of debate.
We're going to suspend the regular order of business. As you know, this morning we the last local membership meeting. To the recommendation of the local executive board a month ago, we received a letter from the Republican State Central Committee asking us to invite a speaker here to hear their particular sides of questions to be debated. In true democracy, we believe in Local 157 that all sides of the question should be heard. We have invited this morning to both political parties here to say what their positions are. Now, regardless of what you think of the individual or what their positions are, remember, it's the true democracy. You have the right to your opinion. And regardless if you disagree with the opinion of either speaker, that you give them the right to be heard, and we don't want any types of boos or catcalls or anything else in the meeting. If anybody does that, we'll ask the sergeant-at-arms to have him removed from the membership meeting here, because we think that we have to hear both sides. Now, on the thing, what we're going to have is that first we're going to have one side speak for 15 minutes and the other side give their position for 15 minutes, and we're going to have 5 minutes of rebuttal from both sides. After that, we'll have some questions from the audience. And the people that are in the audience, the only ones who are asking is the membership of 157. You have to get up and identify yourself, what shop you're from, if you're a member of 157, and ask the questions to either one or the other of the chairmen of the particular political parties. Now, I'd just like at this particular time to introduce the chairman of the Republican State Central Committee, Mr. John Fikens. Got to give Mr. Fikens a hand. Mr. John Fikens.
Members of Local 157, Neil Stabler, and American friends. It's especially a treat to me to be able to come into a union hall and to be able to talk with you this morning. I hope that this becomes a habit. I'd like to see more Republicans talking and exchanging points of view with members of organized labor. I'm here for just a few minutes to talk to you, of course, about something that I wish I could come back or have Republican candidates and office holders come back time and time again to present to you, and that's the Republican side of the story with regard to labor. In discussing the Republican point of view and organized labor in this state, it's very important to note that the Republican Party believes fundamentally in progress, opportunity, and full employment. We believe strongly in the necessity for having jobs, good paychecks, and we say that these depend on progress in our community, in our state, and our nation. So in my talk to you this morning, you're going to hear that word progress run throughout my brief views. Now, first of all, I think it's necessary to put the record straight and to point out some things to you. In 1954, unfortunately, in this state and also in an election year, we were faced with unemployment as we are faced today. And at that time, the leaders of the opposition party and Governor Williams made the most of it. I'd like to call to your attention what he said. At a Democrat dinner in Battle Creek on September the 28th, 1954, Governor Williams made one of his many campaign speeches demanding that the people of this state elect a Democrat senator, elect Democrat congressman, a Democratic administrative board, as well as re-electing himself. And this was the reason that he gave. He said, quote, "The Republicans have turned readjustment into recession. These are the things which have brought distress to Michigan. To correct these policies, Michigan needs only Pat McNamara and Democratic congressmen in Washington. Michigan also needs an administration in Lansing able and willing to fight for Michigan's economic interests." The people of this state listened to that, and they elected Pat McNamara. They elected two additional Democrats as congressmen to Washington. They elected a Democratic administrative board, and they reelected Governor Williams. In Detroit, on Labor Day in 1954, Governor Williams kept up the same theme, and if you go back into his speeches constantly, he asked that Democrats be elected to state office and to national office so that unemployment would not recur. On September the 5th, 1954, he said, "It is our duty not only to challenge the existence of unemployment, but to challenge all of those mistaken policies that have contributed to this misfortune. Today," he said, "we are suffering from short-sighted government policies which once more are giving us unemployment, curtailed purchasing power, and recession." I say to you, again, that the people listened to that and re-elected him and re-elected Democrats all over the place. And I know, because I was chairman then and I felt the edge of the buzzsaw. But did that change anything? Today, we have unemployment. And did the election of Democrats solve that problem? Let me point out some things to you which I think represent the other side of the argument and ought to be thought out by the people of this state. In 1955, President Eisenhower recommended a $100+ billion highway program. Had that highway program been passed in 1955, it would have affected materially the job situation in Michigan today. There is no state in the Union that is more interested in having highways across the length and breadth of the United States than are the people of Michigan and its auto workers. Because you see, you can't sell automobiles unless you have cars on which you can drive, highways on which you can drive them. But what happened to the president's highway program in 1955? A Democrat Congress killed the bill. And of course, Democrat Senator Pat McNamara, who broke the tie in the Senate and who voted to organize the Senate along the lines of the Democrat Party, was in the Congress at that time. Had the president's $100 billion highway program gone through in 1955, there would have been more jobs now, less unemployment now, more highways would be in the building stage now. And it was a Democrat Congress that stopped that. Now let's take a look at the school construction bill. The president recommended in 1955 that the school construction bill be passed. That again would have put millions and millions of dollars into our economy and would have helped the purchasing power of the United States throughout the length and breadth of the land. But who killed that school construction bill? A Democrat Congress, as you people here well know. And you also know the reason for their having killed it. And then, too, in this year of 1956, the president proposed in his farm program a prepayment soil plan. Now, had the prepayment soil plan gone into law, millions and millions of dollars would be paid to farmers today. And what would they be doing with it? Not digging a hole and putting the money into it. But they would be buying threshers, binders, tractors, trucks, all of the things that are necessary to operate farms, and that would have created additional jobs now. But that was not put into the law, and again, it was blocked by a Democratic Congress. Let me continue, because there is so much ground to cover. But I think these points are important. You should remember that if We are to maintain progress. We have got to have people who act. And the Democratic Congress this year certainly has shown no signs of being willing to act. They're bumbling and dawdling and fumbling on the highway program, the prepayment soil plan, the school construction plan has been a record of bumbling and dawdling and fumbling, and your jobs have been involved directly with it. Now, as against that kind of record, I'd like to turn to the Republican record on labor-labor relations, first in the national sense. I'd like to point out to you that the cost of living in the Eisenhower administration has been pretty well stabilized during the past 3 years. There has been less time lost in costly strikes. Employment has set records in two of the past 3 years, 1953 and 1955. And now I'll give you the employment figures. In this state, in 1949, 2,189,000. In 1952, 2,358,000. In 1954, 2,423,000. And in 1956, 2,476,000. These things show that the employment records are still going up and that we can have every confidence and every enthusiasm that they will continue to go up. And the national record set by the Eisenhower administration is boosting that. Labor unions have expanded their membership and are growing stronger, including the impending merger of the AFL and the CIO. Labor unions have had some of their best years, and I now want to read just a few statistics from U.S. News and World Report. The United Automobile Workers in 1955 doubled its net worth, now has nearly $40 million. The International Ladies Garment Workers have reserves of $200 million. The United Mine Workers can now count $146 million in its union and welfare funds. The net worth of the UAW, another figure, was $39.4 million as of December 31, 1955. The Amalgamated Clothing Workers, $250 million. The Railroad Trainmen, nearly $54 million in assets. The Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, 48.2 tenths millions of dollars in assets. The Machinist Union, $15 million. The Steel Workers, nearly $19 million. And these are all figures as of 1955, December 31. Wages arose to new peaks. The hourly wage rates in manufacturing were up 12.6% in 1955 over 1952, the last Democrat war year. The average today is $1.88, as against the average then of $1.67. There have been income tax cuts, and I'd like to just point those things out to you because there's been a lot of misunderstanding about this. I'd like you to know that since the income tax law has been in effect, since 1913, Republican Congresses have cut taxes 8 out of 10 times that taxes were cut since that law went into effect, but that Democrat Congresses have raised taxes 14 out of the 15 times that taxes were raised since the income tax law went into effect. In 1954, the Republicans provided the biggest tax cut in American history for every citizen, a total cut of $7.5 billion. 62% of the cut went to individuals and 30% went to corporations. Low-income taxpayers under $5,000, the people who paid 33% of the total taxes under the Democrats, got 37% of the Republican reduction in 1954. Every man, woman, and child averages $1,662 a year. This means every man, woman, and child now averages $125 a year more to spend under the Republicans than they did under the Democrats. There is confidence in the future because of the tremendous expansion of industry which has been brought about to create more jobs and more products. This was all brought about under the Eisenhower administration, an administration which tries to benefit all and favor none. Now then, let's look at the state picture. In Michigan, so far as unemployment compensation is concerned, we repeat, and we are proud of it, and we will continue to repeat, that in Michigan, the unemployment compensation law is the highest of any of the laws of any of the states. In Michigan, the rates run from $30 to $54 a week. No state can claim that record. Nevada is second, $30 to $50. Connecticut third, $35 to $52. Ohio fourth, $33 to $39. New York, $36 to $39, and so forth. Michigan has the best workmen's compensation statute in the state and pays more liberal benefits. And I'd like to make one other point on unemployment compensation rates before I leave it, and that is that the total average benefit check in Michigan is also the highest of any of the states. Michigan pays out an average unemployment check of $33.35. There is no state which matches that record. And so when I talk to you as a Republican, I'm not talking to you as one who says that the Republican Party has no concern for people in times of adversity. We do believe that we do have a definite responsibility to people who are out of work. We do believe that they should be taken care of. As Eisenhower has repeatedly said, the aim of the Republican Party is to be liberal when it comes to human needs and to be conservative when it comes to dealing with people's money. And so I am speaking today not because the Republican Party has been niggardly in this state, but because they have met and are meeting their responsibilities. And so I turn just very briefly to the future. I want to talk to you about what the situation will be in Michigan in the foreseeable future. Let's talk, thank you, in terms first of employment. In April, there were 1,262,000 people employed in the three-county area of Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb. This is expected to rise to 1,345,000, a gain of 83,000 in the fall. Projection by experts show a constant gain in the average employment for the next 5 years, until by 1960 it is expected that 1,487,000 persons will be employed in the Wayne, Oakland, Macomb area. This is a gain of 142,000 or 28,000 jobs, new jobs a year, which can be created in this area if we all work together so to do. I think that these estimates reflect a great deal of confidence in the future. But more so, what is being done at the present time? I think that you should know that the President's highway program, which went into effect just very recently, will create 270,000 new jobs. 5,200,000 tons of steel will be used in the first year. 112 million barrels of cement will be used. 18,345,000 pounds of explosives. 50 million barrels of asphalt. 357 million tons of stone, gravel, and sand. This bill, blocked by the Democrat Congress last year and passed this year, certainly will create a tremendous number of jobs. And by 1960, the estimate is that under this highway bill, there will be 500,000 new jobs. Under the COBO program, here in Detroit, to construct 258 miles of new expressway, $100.5 billion will be expended. And this means additional jobs immediately in the next few months. The Army has already rushed 40 millions of new contracts into this area. And I need only mention that the Gratiot Redevelopment Project, one project alone, will pump another 25 million into the economy here. I'd like to say what the situation is in some other cities of the state. In the Benton Harbor, St. Joseph area, they've been increasing on an average of 1,100 new jobs a year. In 1955, there were 24,600 jobs there. And in 1956, 24,650 jobs at the present time. They plan a $12 million industrial expansion program there. Muskegon, likewise, shows confidence in the future. The industrial workforce there today is 29,000 jobs, and they expect a rapidly increasing job potential there, which will increase employment to 41,000 by 1980. In Flint today, the estimated population is 198,000. By 1960, the population in Flint will be 200,000, and they report that they will be able to keep fully employed that kind of a population potential. In closing, there's one thing that I've got to say to you. These things do not just happen. Businessmen invest to make jobs because they have confidence in their country and in their government and in their people. The Republican Party has these characteristics. It is concerned with the future, with jobs, employment, and opportunity. But today we seem to hear Democrats talking only about unemployment and unemployment compensation. And I want to say this to you. You never sent a son or a daughter to college on an unemployment compensation check. You never bought an automobile on an unemployment compensation check. It's jobs you want. And the thing that we're interested in providing is jobs. You see, our program is aimed at creating jobs. The Democrat program is aimed at making unemployment more attractive. We say that you've got to constantly create a political climate in which people will be willing to risk capital in order to start businesses, in order to continue them, in order to provide jobs. You can't have this thing unless those things are done. The government can't do it. It takes a lot of people working as individuals, having mutual faith and trust in each other to create jobs. Actually, you see, when you talk in terms of what the future means, you talk in terms of what free enterprise can do. People have got to be willing under a free enterprise system to take risks to create jobs, but they've also got to be willing to solve the problems that the free enterprise system creates. I think the Republican Party today is mature in the sense that it recognizes that while it provides for the security needs, the human needs of people, it must constantly keep its eye focused on the real target, which is to keep that kind of a climate in which people have confidence so that they will go out and put more businesses together, start more factories, expand more plants, build more and more of the good things of life. I think that this is true, and I will say it in conclusion. My only quarrel with the Democratic Party is this, that I don't think their goals are high enough. I think that under the Republican Party, we can look forward to greater goals. We're not interested, as Mr. Ruther apparently seemed to say he was on Friday, in putting controls on auto production. We want to expand auto production. We want more and more of the good things of life for everyone, but we feel that it can only be done by allowing people to work together in a free system. Thank you very much.
That was the Republican State Chairman of the Michigan Party, John Pikins. You're listening to a political debate between Republican State Chairman John Pikins and Democratic State Chairman Neil Stabler, transcribed by WJR, the Goodwill Station, in the public interest from UAW Local 157 headquarters in Detroit. The moderator of this debate, Blaine Maron, president of Local 157, has just introduced the Democratic opposition to John Pikins, Neil Stabler, chairman of the Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maron, ladies and gentlemen of Local 157, and friends. This is an auspicious occasion on which to be conducting a debate, this the 20th anniversary of one of the America's great labor organizations, the United Automobile Workers. And I was happy that Mr. Pikins expressed some interest in the two-party system, because in Michigan for something like 100 years, we haven't had a two-party system, an effective one. In fact, we still don't quite have a two-party system. If you will look at what happens in the votes in Michigan, you recognize why this is the case. You recognize that in 1954, 100,000 more Democratic votes were cast than Republican. Yet in the state of Michigan, the Republicans elected 23 out of 34 members of the state Senate, 59 out of 110 members of the state legislature. We don't yet have the two-party system in Michigan working effectively, but we're working in that direction. And now, there is a well-established saying, by your fruits you shall know them. It's an expression that the way human conduct can be judged in all areas of activity, from the batting average of a ball player to the public record of politics. Shorter way to say the same thing is the tart expression, actions speak louder than words. And as shorter still is the simple sentence, let's look at the record. The Republican Party in Michigan and in the nation has a clear anti-labor record. The Democratic Party has a record of equal consideration for all people in the population, for farmers, labor, business, professional people. Our doors are open, the doors of the Democratic Party are open to everyone. We invite everybody to participate. This is the way you make sure that a party is thoroughly representative. And in the Democratic Party, we have pretty well succeeded in getting that kind of representation. Men and women of organized labor have practically no voice in the policy of the Republican Party in Michigan. Labor is not proportionally represented on the Republican State Central Committee. Labor is not proportionally represented among the county and district chairman of the Republican Party. And when grave decisions are made by the delegation from Michigan to the Republican National Convention in San Francisco this summer, who speaks for you on that delegation? Let's ask Mr. Fikens to explain why men and women from organized labor are squeezed out of his organization, from the county level on up to the national convention. The Democratic Party, in its organization in Michigan, numbers men and women from organized labor in just about the same proportions as the members of organized labor bear to the population of Michigan as a whole. In addition, we have businessmen, housewives, farmers, lawyers, doctors, all segments of the population represented in the party structure. This is a fundamental and a significant point. The Republican Party in Michigan can't really represent labor and can't properly represent the people of the state of Michigan when labor has a less than proportionate voice in making its policies. Of course, Republicans say they represent labor, but they do so by arbitrarily deciding, without labor having any voice in that decision, what they think is good for labor. And they are that segment of big business which owns the Republican Party. Now, one of the best tests of what people say and do is what they actually carry out. And I'm going to offer the Republican Party a chance to exhibit their philosophy and action in the immediate future. This week, the governor of Michigan has called a special session of the legislature. One of the items of that special session is unemployment compensation. And Mr. Fikens can talk all he wants about the future, and we are thoroughly in accord with the dynamic principles of the American economy. We want it to expand, we contribute to it, and in fact, if Mr. Fikens will look back at the record of New Deal legislation, he'll recognize that the many things which the Republican Party fought all during the Roosevelt administration are the very factors which they have contributed to Republican prosperity at the present time. I call it Republican prosperity because he does, but let us recognize that the Republicans said they were going to change these New Deal principles, and they haven't dared. So maybe we can share in the credit for that prosperity, and we're happy to. But we've got a problem here in Michigan, a problem that can't be wished away. You can talk about building roads, but the auto builders aren't going to build roads. You can talk about other kinds of help, but the people who are unemployed right now need help. So, Mr. Fikens, we invite you and the Republican Party to join in the coming session of the legislature in doing something about our present situation. You've been urged to do this, in fact, by the president. President several years ago urged that unemployment compensation be raised. You have been boasting about the level of unemployment compensation, and that is just a very fancy boast. Two ways. First, you talk about the high level of compensation. Only a few percent of the people get that. You have to have lots and lots of dependents to get that high dollar that you're talking about. Second, you talk about the high average. But remember, Michigan is a high-pay state, and the percentage of unemployment compensation in Michigan is not the highest in the country. We are fairly well down the list. So what the governor is proposing in the special session is to increase the percentage from its present approximate 35% up to 66 2/3, and proposes to extend the duration of unemployment compensation from 26 to 39 weeks. I notice that some Republican senators are already opposing this. The Senator Hiddle says this is a device to help big business. I'm happy that we are being accused of helping big business. We have nothing against big business. Recognize unemployment compensation for what it really is. It helps the whole community. The people who are going out of business in this area are not General Motors and Chrysler and Ford. It's the little shop around the corner that is closing up. They're closing up for lack of purchasers. Unemployment compensation helps to restore purchasing power. So, Mr. Fikens, let me invite the Republican Party to demonstrate that it really has the concern and interests of the working people of Michigan at heart. And we invite you to support the proposals of the governor in getting an improvement in unemployment compensation this week. Let me go on to the basic national legislation. The Democratic Party is the party that produced the Wagner Act, rightly called Labor's Magna Carta. The Republican Party is the party that produced the Taft-Hartley Law. I don't pose as an expert in the difficult and technical aspects of the Taft-Hartley Law, but this I do know. The Wagner Act was based on the attitude that working men and women have the right to organize into unions, and further, that unions are desirable and should be encouraged. The Taft-Hartley Law is an expression of a totally different attitude. The attitude of this Republican legislation is that unions are a kind of evil, barely to be tolerated. That unions should be inhibited and frustrated at every turn, that labor should be kept in its place as though there were something unwholesome about the great development of unions in America. And this, I think, is something that marks a change in attitude in the American public. We recognize citizens of all kinds that unions are a desirable, a necessary, a permanent part of American life, and that the course that ought to be followed for the benefit of the country and to secure that prosperity that you are referring to and that we all want, we need good relations between all segments of the population, between unions and management, and we think that the Taft-Hartley Law hinders that good relation and that the Wagner Act has helped it. My third example goes to the Michigan legislature. Republicans have twice passed in the Michigan Senate, in 1955 and 56, a vicious, misnamed political freedom bill. This bill is not law today simply because there are enough Democrats in the Michigan House of Representatives to sustain a veto of Governor Williams, and Governor Williams would certainly veto such a bill. Had that bill become law, Mr. Fikens, it is doubtful that we would be holding this debate here today. It probably would be illegal. The Republicans in that bill want to deprive the members of labor unions of the right to political action through the democratic processes of their union. The Republican pretense that they want to protect the rights of Republicans within unions is a lot of nonsense. What they really seek to achieve is the elimination of your voice, the voice of union people, through the democratic channels of unions and political policies and programs. They fear the voice of unions. And if they succeed in making proper union political activity illegal, then they can really go to work on unions. The long-range purpose of the Republican Party is to take away by legislation what unions gain by collective bargaining. Now, this is sounds like an extreme statement. Let me demonstrate it. Under the last Republican governor, and with the legislature in its pocket, we go back now to the year 1947-48. Republican leadership in Michigan enacted into law 83 amendments to the Unemployment Insurance Act, which crippled the application of that act to the unemployed worker. Has the Republican Party, in its new 1956 attitude, that it wants to help workers, has it done anything to remove those 83 amendments? Absolutely not. Instead, in legislative session after legislative session ever since, the Republican Party has fought adequate increases in unemployment insurance payments and has tried to cripple the act even further by fishhook amendments, technical amendments designed to undercut the workers' insurance payments and make it easier for employers to win appeals. Now, the fifth great difference in attitudes between the parties is this. The Republican Party looks upon labor as a separate group of people. Whenever it thinks of labor, it thinks of it as something apart, as a group of people divorced from other political questions. The Democratic Party believes that union members are interested in all legislation and actions of government. We know you are interested in schools, in highways, in public parks, in the St. Lawrence Seaway, in farm problems, in mental health, and in public health and progress generally. We look upon you as members of the community concerned with a wide range of issues, and your voice is heard in our party on these issues. You are represented in the Democratic Party from the precincts to our delegation to the National Convention, and you are represented among the Democrats in the Michigan Legislature. This is proper and good and wholesome. You are not represented in the Republican Party because the Republican Party doesn't want you in it. Let me summarize the five areas that illustrate the basic attitude of the two parties toward working men and women. One, union members not proportionally represented in the organization of the Republican Party. Second, the Republican Party basically believes that unions are a kind of necessary evil which must be reluctantly tolerated. Democratic Party believes unions are a wholesome development in the democratic system. Three, the Republican Party fears the voice of labor in politics as expressed through the democratic processes of unions. The Democratic Party welcomes your voice. We are not the sponsors of the so-called Political Freedom Bill, which is really a political censorship measure. Fourth, the Republican Party has a consistent public record of fighting for amendments to cripple unemployment insurance and fighting against realistic increases in those payments. The Democratic Party has an exact opposite public record. And fifth, the Republican Party looks upon union members as a separate class to be courted in election years. The Democratic Party views labor as interested in a whole range of political problems, from mental health to schools. I was very interested in the manner in which the Republican Party has been expressing its interest in 1956. And I was interested in Mr. Fiken's remarks about 1954. Let me spend just a moment responding to those. Remember, he said that in 1954, we had talked about the serious unemployment, urging the election of Democrats, and that the state had responded by electing Democrats. He then said, here we are in 1956 in the same trouble again. Notice what happened in 1954. In 1954, frightened by the election of Democrats, the Republicans changed their credit policies very greatly. In 1955, we had a boom year. Perhaps we had too much of a boom year because they may have changed too radically, and the auto companies may have gotten away let their enthusiasm get away with them. But in any event, they changed their credit policies again. And during late in 1955, we have had a series of changes in credit, which again have tightened up on the automobile market. So that what we need perhaps again is another fight for the Republicans. It appears that if we do not keep at them, they let their inclinations toward tight credit run away with them. So that let me repeat the 1954 procedure is necessary again in 1956.
That was Neil Stabler,
chairman of the Democratic Party in Michigan, presenting his views in this debate from UAW Local Hall 157.
Thank you, Mr. Stabler. This time we will have a rebuttal by the chairman of the Republican State Central Committee, Mr. John Fikens. Mr. Fikens?
Thank you, Mr. Marin. I've made a couple of notes here, and I'd like to hit very quickly the points that Neil Stabler raised. You recall he said that Republicans are so anti, so hostile to organized labor that they don't even want their national delegates to the Republican National Convention to come from the ranks of organized labor. Let me explode that one right now, because we're awfully proud of the several members of organized labor that we have on our delegation to the National Convention. And I'd like to name two of the principal members. One, John Thorpe. John Jack Thorpe, who is the Secretary Treasurer of the Michigan Federation of Labor, AFL, and certainly one of your brothers in the organized labor movement. Harry Brothers, UAW, CIO, and he's going as a delegate to the National Convention. And I think you should know that. Our delegation represents people from all walks of life. Neil also made mention of the political Freedom Bill, and that gives me a good opportunity to talk about something, and I wish I had a lot of time to talk about this one. But you see, I can clear up here, I think, some of the things that the propagandists on the other side are trying to do to the Republican Party. Let me make some things clear. First, I believe, and the Republican Party believes, that labor should definitely have a voice in political affairs. I say that it's the responsibility of organized labor to be in politics, that they have a right to endorse candidates and to work for candidates and to campaign and electioneer on their behalf. I say that it's a falsehood to say that had the Political Freedom Bill been passed, we could not have met here in this hall today. Then what are we talking about as Republicans? This is what we're talking about, and this is it. Last week, you read in the Detroit Free Press that 56% of labor, of organized labor, of rank and file members, 56% are saying that they will now support President Eisenhower for re-election. Well, if that is so, then why should the union dues of those members who are going to support President Eisenhower be used to support his opponent in the election? I say this, that if labor wants to be in politics, let them get their money voluntarily. If you people want to contribute to the Democratic Party, that's fine with me. I hope you also contribute to the Republican Party. But you see, you've got to belong to a union these days in order to hold on to a job. That's the union shop clause. And I have no quarrel with that. Neil Stabler will tell you that I went to Lansing and opposed a right-to-work bill. But you've got to be a member in good standing of your union and pay dues. And what I'm against, because I believe it's un-American, is that some labor leader should tell you that you've got to back a particular candidate whether or not you have any choice in that matter. I say that as Americans, you're free to make your own decision, and that union dues should never be used for politics if you've got to pay union dues in order to hold on to a job. That's why I say let there be political freedom. Let everyone contribute voluntarily to the party of his choice. But let no man, whether he works for a corporation or whether he's a member of organized labor, be compelled to contribute to a candidate for whom he has no particular love or affection. Now, the union says, if Fikens has his way, we will be denied free speech. I say, why don't you concern yourselves with the individual rights of the workers? Why should a Republican member of the union have to contribute to a Democrat candidate for governor? There just isn't any fairness in that. And that's the substance of the Political Freedom Bill. And then Neil Stabler says, look at those awful Republicans. What have they done about those 83 amendments? Incidentally, I thought there were 88. But what have they done about those awful 83 fishhook amendments that were put into the law, he says, some 10 years ago? Well, now look, that was 10 years ago. And I'll tell you, those amendments aren't in the law anymore today, but the Democrats are still running on something that unfortunately was done 10 years ago. And I'll prove it to you. Take the death penalty clause that a number of people are still talking about. Well, in the 1955 session, and I had a little something to do with this, the death penalty clause was removed. A fella can now transfer from one line of work to another or from one shop to another and take all of his credits with him that he had in the previous shop. There is this constant attempt on the part of Democrat leaders to make ovaries and evil men out of Republicans who sincerely believe and want to get just as many of the good things of life as you do. Now let's come down to the point that Mr. Stabler brought up at the last when he said, here the Republicans are talking about what happened in Michigan in 1954, but maybe we ought to give the Republican Party a fright. You know, it's rather interesting to me as one Republican that there's prosperity in practically the entire United States today, with one exception, here in the automotive capital of the world. And the Republican Party is not in office here in Michigan. We do not have the governor's office. We do not have the administrative board. We do not have the policy for governing the executive department of government. I'm saying to you this, how can Republicans be blamed when a Democrat Congress sits in Washington and a Democrat governor sits in Michigan for what's happening in the unemployment situation? There are two sides to that story. And then finally, let me ask Mr. Stabler something which I'd like to see the Democratic Party do. He says, I'd like to see the Republican Party join with us this week in passing some real unemployment compensation legislation. And I wish that that's all that there would be to it. Because if that were the whole problem, just increasing unemployment compensation, do you think that I would stand here and say no to that? Of course not, because I hope that I'm just as decent and honest in these things as you are. But I say to the Democrats, when, for goodness sakes, are they going to start thinking about the fact that people have to start businesses, have to expand them, have to put money into them? And you can talk all you want about increasing taxes, increasing unemployment compensation, increasing workmen's compensation, but somebody's got to pay for it. And I say to the Democrats, let them come out this week in a far-reaching program to create more businesses in Michigan. Because the only thing that will create jobs in the final analysis will be to have more businesses here. And you don't have businesses come into Michigan or stay in Michigan if you're constantly threatening them with taxes of every kind. Now, I say this notwithstanding the fact that I, with Stabler, have a deep concern about unemployed and unemployment. We know the record here in Michigan on that. We're not niggardly. But I say it's not only putting through unemployment compensation that makes jobs. That doesn't do it. What I'm here to try to get you to see is what really makes jobs. It's not the hole in the donut that we're talking about, which is the unemployment compensation check. It's the donut. You folks would rather have jobs than unemployment checks. And what we've got to develop is not only a program that takes care of the unemployed, but also a program that makes thousands and thousands of more jobs every year in Michigan. And the Democrats don't seem to be concerned with that.
At this time, I'd like to have Mr. Neil Stabler, the chairman of the Central Democratic State Central Committee, to have his rebuttal. Mr. Stabler.
Let's begin with your last point, John. The Republican Party and the Democratic Party are both interested in jobs, are both interested in business. We approach it differently. We think the most important thing is to make sure that there is a market. If you have a market, people maintain businesses, they found new ones. You are more concerned about the assistance for capital. You are more interested in the banking aspects of increasing the discount rate. This is the traditional Republican approach to the problem of more jobs. Actually, both of these points of view need to be taken into consideration. Let us recognize that we are both right, but at the moment, John, our problem in the short run here is 250,000 people out of work who aren't going to be put to work by a highway program that goes into effect next year and the year after. We have got to find help immediately. Sure, we are very concerned about the long run, and let me stress this, because we appear to be much more concerned than you. You presented some very fine projections on what employment will be in 5 years and 10 years. But you've forgotten about automation, John. Automation is going to be doing things to jobs in the future. And we need to concern ourselves, we need to study that. The governor's proposed the Michigan legislature a study of automation. The Republicans in the legislature turned it down. We need to be worrying about that so that as these developments occur, we have prepared for them. We have done things that will provide other types of jobs. We too are interested in promoting a climate in which business of all sorts will find it desirable to do business. We have promoted that climate. But let me remind you that the greatest change in the climate comes not from a Democratic Congress, it comes from a Republican national administration. It's Mr. Eisenhower and his administrative officers, the Federal Reserve, that have been making these changes, which even the auto companies say are bad. So let me remind you that it takes a fright to that national administration, or this year we have a chance to change it, and I predict we will. But now let me come back to the point of you were making about union dues, because this is a matter that has been talked about a great deal. You've created a tremendous amount of confusion on the subject. Let's see if we can get it clear by talking about the three kinds of money raised through union channels. One is straight dues money. This is used for strict union activities. I believe you're not questioning, nobody is questioning. Second is the citizenship fund. This is raised along with dues money and is compulsory for union members. This is the item that I believe you always talk about. But it's not clear that this is the item, because there is a third kind of money that's entirely voluntary money raised through what used to be called PAC, or in the AFL, LLPE, and now through a new organization, combined organization, Committee on Political Education, COPE. This money is raised a dollar at a time by individual contributions and is not connected with dues money. This is the money that goes unrestrictedly into political purposes. But when you talk, John, you always talk as though all political money was this second category, this citizenship money. That citizenship money is the money that's used to operate union papers. It runs union TV programs. And I believe that this is the spot you are trying to confuse the public on as being the labor's political activity. Now, that was a subject of a suit instituted by yourself. You got the suit going. A decision has been reached in the federal circuit court, that the federal district court, the union is not violating the Corrupt Practices Act in its utilization of citizenship funds. It's now been appealed to the Supreme Court. It'll be settled there. But I predict, John, that it will not be settled the way you want it. You want to shut off union, the voice of unions. But notice that this is precisely the same thing that corporations are engaging in when they hire commentators. And if you still the voice of unions, you ought logically to ask the corporations stop hiring Fulton Lewis and Gabriel Heater and Mr. Wells, who talks every morning, and many others. Now, let me ask you about one more thing. In the 1955 campaign, the Republican Party, published literature that was used in the campaign, and I've been saving it ever since. I have three pieces here. The front of this piece reads, "The political bosses of the CIO are plotting to teach your children their propaganda in your schools, to pack your Supreme Court with CIO mouthpieces, to take over your township government." That reminds me, John, another thing you said in 1955. You said that the CIO had offered $1,200 to get people to run as candidates for supervisor. I challenged you on that. I offered a $100 reward, which I offered to contribute to my hometown community fund, if you would produce one single instance of this. My reward still stands. It's now past its first anniversary. I still challenge you to come up with any evidence on that point. But let me get back to this this piece of campaign literature you put out. It reads, "The Political Action Committee of the CIO, directed by Walter Reuther and Gus Scholl, is determined to take over the direction of Michigan schools and use them for their own propaganda purposes. It is determined to make the courts vehicles for their own philosophy." And on the back page, these patriotic citizens, and you there list all the Republican candidates with their pictures, "These patriotic citizens are your hope to stop the CIO bosses from forcing their propaganda on you and your children." Another circular, the CIO Political Action Committee has drawn the issue for April 4, and the heading in it, "Do you favor CIO brainwashing?" And going on in a similar vein, this one is signed by seven people, including one Republican state representative and one Republican candidate for Congress. And then I have another piece that was circulated in rural areas, which says, "To be sure this doesn't happen, be sure that your children will not be shortchanged in education because of place of residence, creed, or race. Be sure your children will not be taught un-American ideologies. Vote Republican, April 4. Keep control of your own schools." Well, now, I ask you, John, to account for these pieces of literature, and I ask you, in fact, to apologize to the Union people of Michigan on behalf of the Republican Party for producing this sort of thing.
Mr. Stabler has just concluded his rebuttal and this debate, which marks the first public head-on clash of this election year between the two major parties of Michigan outside the legislative halls in Lansing. The Republican Party was represented by its state chairman, John Fikens. The Democratic Party by its state chairman, Neil Stabler. The scene of debate was United Auto Workers Local 157, headquarters in Detroit, with the local's president, Blaine Marin, acting as moderator. This transcribed debate has been presented in the public interest as a means of permitting major spokesmen of the major parties of Michigan to more clearly outline their positions in election year 1956. This is Jim Vinyl. Good evening.